Welcome to Software Testing Unleashed, the podcast for testers, developers, and software makers who live quality as an attitude. Get fresh ideas and sharp insights to grow your mindset, to learn new methods, and to drive real change in how we build software. Better software and better teams for a better world. Hi, I'm Richie, software quality coach, keynote speaker, and author. My guest today is Dirk-Jan de Groot. Dirk-Jan is a principal consultant and agile inspirator. He's known for helping organizations take the next step in their agile journey, not just with theory, but with hands-on practices that deliver real value. As an RTE coach and value delivery expert, he works with leaders, scrum masters, and teams to drive agile transformations that stick. He's a respected international speaker, a columnist, and the author of several best-selling books, including his newest one on surfing the waves of agile. We first met at the testing retreat last year and had some great discussions about agile quality. In this episode, we talked about agile quality too, and what it actually takes to make it work in real teams. Are we living agility or just following frameworks like a checklist? What happens when everyone is responsible for quality, but no one really owns it? And why are we still surprised when developers test faster than a single tester can ever catch up? We explored how to break testing and improvement down into small, actionable practices. Dirk-Jan shared how to scale skills, not just frameworks, and how to connect strategy and team-level action through shared responsibility. And we looked at where quality gets lost today, and how the biggest blockers often sit in the management level, not in the team. And a little goodie, if you listen to this episode, there is a chance to win a book from Dirk-Jan, his newest book. Just follow the link in the show notes. And now, enjoy the episode. Hi, Dirk-Jan. Nice to have you on the show here.
Very good to have you here as well. I'm glad finally we found the opportunity to meet, although it's online.
Yeah. We met in person last year on the testing retreat. And then we get in contact and I said, okay, you have to come to my podcast here because you're a brilliant mind and have a lot of brilliant thoughts about agile and quality. And so I think it's a huge benefit for the whole testing community too. Yeah, and I think we have a great topic when we talk to each other. It's about agile quality and how do we do agile quality nowadays? And
yeah,
so what's your first thought when you think of agile quality 2025?
Well, so that's a nice question. I'm not really sure, but the funny thing is, I think it splits right between leading people and lacking people, or something like that. Because, as you know, I've been doing a lot of testing in the first, say, 20 years of my career, and then I moved over to more agile kind of stuff. And recently, I was at interim a test manager. And I didn't really like that in the first place because it was only 2 months or something, so very short. But in the beginning, I didn't like it because I thought, oh, things probably changed that much. I don't want to do that anymore. I'm not really sure if I'm capable. But in that context, so you got leading and lagging, of course, it wasn't that because we didn't get really to, as test manager, didn't really get into the tooling and that kind of stuff where a lot of things have changed big time, I think. But on the managerial, test managerial stuff, it's not that different. And in that organization, we were still having a lot of the old school problems. So it was really like memory drawers. Like I was working in and suddenly, oh, wait. Now I remember we have the problem here as well. So in that case, fundamentally, I'm not thinking it has changed a lot. Testing it didn't really do that change a lot. On the other hand, I think technical did a lot. And yeah, for the leading part,
yeah.
I don't know, actually, do you? Agile testing, is that much different than testing?
No, I think it is the same principles, but what comes to my mind is that an agile project forces you to use it because you have to. You cannot sit and wait until you get some increment in 2 years.
And on the side note, there is then if I talk about testing, I talk about also having automation in place, the CI/CD pipeline. That's not agile testing. That's just proper testing. So if you have all those things in place, all those competences, all those how do you call it? Skills done, and you're doing it then in a proper way, it doesn't really matter. But I'm still surprised that sometimes I see organizations that start a new project, big project, and then I think, oh, probably everything will be done automatically, right? And then I look in the plans and it's like, no, are you still doing manual testing on a functional level? Oh, where's your CI? Oh, you don't? Yeah, something like that. But is that testing nowadays as a standard, the de facto standard? Yeah. I'm not sure. Again, it's the leading thing, right? Yeah. Where are you?
Yeah. And what do you think is for a team to get into the testing and quality stuff more when you look at the from the leading perspective? So how do you think can we get people there that they use their knowledge and what they all learned about testing and the stuff?
I think it's two things: having the knowledge together and using it, or allowed to be using it. So lately I'm talking about a lot about skilling up. So not scaling up your agile, but skilling up. And it's all to do with, of course, the Agile Manifesto, where they say, and the principles like technical excellence kind of thing. But it's very difficult to grasp, I think, for organizations as well as practitioners, whether they're agile or quality or whatever role. And for me, I'm talking a lot about practices, where practice for me is like a small container. The smallest container you can think of, or something like that, sounds really agile, right? Of skills, knowledge, and mindset that you need to do a certain task well. So for a traditional tester, I think one of those could be the container like using test techniques. And then you have a lot of techniques that you can use, of course. But basically, the skill is using it, or the practice. And CI/CD can be a practice, etc. There's a lot of practices that you can do. And I can give you some examples if you like, but what I like most is if you do that, basically you break up the whole thing of innovation and skill knowledge or something like that into really small things. It's much easier to grasp. And then you can start talking with the team, I think, like, hey, I have these skills. Shall we exchange knowledge? And then you can do all kinds of things, from lunch session, brown paper sessions, books, reading, whatever, just to practice that, or do some mopping or something. But also on organizational level, you can also play a different game. Because I've been in too many games, organizations, also the more agile ones, they really thought we should do something with innovation or something. And then people got room in teams to do 10-20% innovation.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, what should we do? And it was too big and not good to grasp. And on one hand, you had then the management layer or the leading layer, leaders that said, like, well, you want to do innovation. Why is anything happening? Why is anything improving? And on the other hand, teams say, like, yeah, what should we do? And if teams don't know what they want to do, then business probably say, if you don't know, I know what you want to do. And then they're stuck with a lot of work again. But by making that more contentionable by using more practices, they say, like, shall we just do CI/CD, or shall we do test automation, or shall we? That kind of stuff. I played around with that on a lot of workshops as well.
Yeah.
So it's just an idea that's starting to get grasp of my mind more and more.
Yeah. I think there are two very important things what you mentioned here is that the first one is to do the practice and the training stuff, because I knew a lot of testers who know the testing techniques, but they don't use it in real life. So to get practice in all this stuff like CI/CD, like test automation, like test design techniques, test data generation, all this stuff is very crucial for doing a good job. And
yeah, but altogether it's a very big heap of a lot of work, and everybody says, "Now then, I just continue doing my ordinary job. It's too much."
Yeah.
Until you break it up in small pieces and start talking about it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the second thing I like very much is when you have these small chunks and say, "Okay, who has the skills for that?" This deals with I think a big problem now in agile teams, when we say everybody is responsible for quality and everybody should do the UI and development and test automation and so on, and nobody a developer wants to code and wants to do his stuff and not doing some UI design or something like that, or doing that.
Yeah.
But if you break it down to this small chunks and say, okay, who has the skills for this?
Who wants to become better in it or something like that?
Yeah, and
you don't have to do it in the team, right?
Yeah.
Because I think like 5 years ago or something, maybe more, we were really like the multiple disciplinary team. Everybody's a developer. Separate testers can't be. I don't think we want that now anymore. Not that strict. So as you say, like the team should be self-sufficient. So all the skills and all the knowledge should be, discipline should be in there, preferably. But people can specialize still.
Yeah.
But you can still do it in a guild or something like that as well, right? So if all the testers once in a while come together in a guild or a chapter, what you call that, you can still do the same game. You don't have to do that also only with the team.
Yeah, it's a great approach, I think. And when you see a good performing team today, is there still a real tester in there, or is it more a quality guy, or some, is it done by the developers?
I think it depends a lot on the level of testing, basically. So if you take the old V model, of course. So the more technical tests are mostly done by the developer, and I think you can actually ask them to do that, or assume that they should, something like that. How do you call that? It's a demand, right? They should. But I think the more functional tests, well, that's maybe a shimmering area. But all the end-to-end testing, or maybe the process testing, or the AA, how do you call that, whether people can really can work with it, might still be something for a tester's job. But I also had sometimes where I had a small example, but it's an old example of a small team where there was one tester who was testing the work of, say, five developers, and he was working his guts out. And then we sat with the team and said, like, he's working very hard. And you're programming, but with five people program faster than he can test. So we made him more responsible of the test strategy. And we said, like, what tests can we do? Should he do as a tester? What tests can you do as a developer? And then we made some kind of table. It's in the book that I once wrote, but I don't know which page. So I'm not going to look at it now straight away. But basically, by saying, like, if you can help me on these parts, then I free some time and I can think more strategic. And I think that was a very nice, mature situation. But that was one of the later test projects. So I didn't reuse that anymore. So it's coming from a real old drawer somewhere.
Yeah.
Now we talk about it. Yeah.
Okay,
but I think that's a good thing, right? If whether you're a test manager or a tester, if you can move a little bit to the strategic level, then you're not running, and then you can say, like, I want these tests to be done, and then on one side you can go to the organization and say, like, hey, is this the test that you want me to do? Yes. And on the other side you can say, like, these are all the tests that we need to do, but I don't have time. Give me an extra tester, or maybe you can help me out on this part or that part. And then once more, it becomes a team activity, of course, where the responsibilities, of course, of the team, but everybody has its own specialism.
Yeah. And what do you think the role of the developer in this all quality stuff? How has it changed in the last years in the all the agile stuff?
I don't know, actually. No. The good question is, why don't I know, right? So I'm thinking now myself whether I'm less involved with teams and more on a strategic level with transformational things working. Maybe that's one thing. I don't know. No, it should still be, and I think that is still a core responsibility of the whole team.
Yeah.
And I think that's grasped by many people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when we go to the strategic level, so we look at on the transformation. So how is the way of going into agile nowadays? So when I remember in the beginning, we had this just the Scrum and maybe some Kanban style, and we did all these frameworks and tried to get it stuff. But how can we start today to go more into a real agile, or into more a value based or a mindset or something like that?
Good question. Well, if you completely. No, it doesn't really matter if you're completely rookie or not. I think you should start with why you want to do it.
Mm.
Because
that's a good question, yeah.
a very difficult question, maybe, yeah, as well. But yesterday I had a talk with somebody who says, like in one way you could say that the heydays of Agile are something gone, right? Depending on what your organization you are, still doing organizations that really are starting. But we used to find it very cool to be agile. Now it's less agile, less cool, at least. And 2 years ago, it was really cool to have a PI event, something like that. And it was more about the PI event than the purpose of the PI event, I think. So if you say, like, did you do your PI? No, I didn't. Oh, I did a PI event with so many. How cool am I? Something like that. And the bigger, the better. But now it seems to be more going to, like, why are we doing that? So personally, as a professional, I'm shifting also from agile transformation much more to that, towards more value delivery expert. And value delivery can be quality value delivery, something like that, business value delivery, whatever you want. So in that way, the real purpose should be, like, agile could be cool, but it's not our main goal. It's just a way to get to another goal.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really liked, because yesterday I had a talk with somebody who says, like, yeah, we want to do some more agile. But basically, although agile might be a little bit on the decline, agility is not, right? But agile, I think we can still use it as a vehicle to get the message across and to get people more responsible and more self-assured and get more decisions lower. And I thought that's really cool.
Mm. Yeah, I think that the question for the why is really important there, because a manager often sees, we just want to get some money back and want to release faster and save some costs and this stuff. But the real purpose of doing agile is not really asked, or they do it because it's like an hype or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and please enter on stage the practices again.
Yeah.
Because what I did, I like to talk about this book a little bit. This is my old book. It's 4 year old. But next month or this month, I'm going to launch this one, which is the updated version.
Mm.
No difference, right? The scroll has been... Oh, yeah, that's also different because I grew older.
Yeah.
But the scroll has become a giraffe. And yes, I grew a little bit older. but in here, there's some practices again. And when I wrote this book, it was much more 4 years ago about being agile and going agile, cool. And maybe if I have started writing this book now, I wouldn't even use agile. But then in the updated version, I tried to reduce the agile a little bit and improve the sense a little bit more. For the same thing, like those practices, in this book I mentioned in the built-in quality thing, you've probably read it once, right? With all these kind of things, the practices. I identified something like 75. And then in built-in quality workshops, I always say, like, if you want to improve your quality here or there in the software development lifecycle, how are you going to? Maybe by embracing practices, a good way to sharpen your tools and actually improve something. But now I made that list a bit longer. I think I'm 100, 150. And I think if we were sparring together, we can come much more as well. But the good thing, you can, if all those practices make up good software development or agile software development or agile, whatever, it's very easy to say, like, which of those practices actually help you to reduce costs, or which of those practices actually help you to speed up, or which of those practices help you to reduce the number of returns or quality errors or something like that, fault injections. I did it even by asking ChatGPT. And they're like, of all these practices, which one? And it came up with a very nice list. Now, whether that's correct or not, I think as an expert, you can always judge that better. But wouldn't that be great to say, like, if all the things that I managed to have and I can do as an organization or as a group of people or as a team, if you want to, you don't want to agile, but you want a cost reduction, then I should start, and then you can really cherry pick practices. And you're still doing agile because the agile practices, and you're still doing proper development because the development practices, but you can sell them in a completely different way.
Yeah.
So that would be much more easier to go back to the very first question I think we started with, to align with the business that says, like, we want a cost reduction, and as a team to respond to that, like, oh, if that's what you want, we want to work on these things. Because I think these will improve our quality, especially as tester, of course, and align with your ambition to do this or that. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be great?
Mm-hmm. I like the view very much, because it's, when I talk to clients who are so fixed in some frameworks like Scrum, and for me it's like a framework, like Scrum is also it's a set of best practices practices that worked for someone or for some organizations, but each team is very individual, so you have to choose what is working for you, and you have to try it out. So you cannot say if it works up front. So
you can
try to do a daily meetup in the morning or something like that, or a Kanban board or something like that. But you have to try it out. If it works for you, it delivers you a value to go forward, and not, it's just a practice you do because everybody's doing it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, and Scrum, of course, is great because it had a lot of rules, much more, for instance, than Kanban. But I'm not that strict in it. My favorite training tool nowadays is my Jenga tower that I bought. So mm-hmm. the Jenga is those wooden blocks, right? That you stack, and then you have to get them out. And I often say, well, Scrum gives you a lot of guidelines, 15-minute stand-up every day with a team of maximum 9 people, that kind of stuff. Does the world really, really have a great disaster if it's 20 minutes? No, I don't think so. Is it a problem if you don't do it every day, if you, et cetera, et cetera? So it's the framework, right? You have to tune and try what works for you. But if you get out too much, then the whole tower will probably fall down. And in trainings, I play with that. And then I can, every time, in every discussion that we have, of course you can do that. But then you take out one more Jenga block. And as long as your tower doesn't fall, it's okay. But if you take out too much and you don't know what you're doing, it might fall.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Yeah,
now.
Great metaphor for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
it's so useful. Yeah.
Yeah.
When we look at the software development process up to now and all the practices, where do you say, or what is your opinion, where is the biggest lack of quality nowadays, where we say, okay, there we can invest, so on a general level, because there we have a lack? What do you think?
I'm very much inclined to say, of course, management, but that would be too easy goal maybe to say that. But in a way, I think it's a good thing, because they should be quality aware as well, because they should be aware that certain practices are important and certain things. I've been struggling with a recent client a lot about, when are we going to accept things? A lot of discussion, a lot of contracts around it. So, and I still don't know. So, if you don't know when you're going to accept, how can I know what I need to test? So in a way, I think, and then the test manager came, so I was at the interim, so I could pass it over to him as well. And he was also saying, but if I want to do this, And especially at the end, the usability testing and use testing that and adapting the business processes. Are they in scope? Are they out scope? Who's going to test that? I think on that area, in this organization, it was all very new. So that will take a lot of time to sort that one out. If you're an organization that does software releases frequently, then that might not be a problem at all.
Yeah. Yeah, so the management is the problem.
Oh, always, of course. And the other thing will probably be diversifying for each team or each organization as well, where all the usual stuff, like if you're not doing CI/CD properly, etc. Why? Start there, maybe. Because I've been also in organizations that so much problem with just ordinary work, that they couldn't really invest and improve anymore because every minute they needed to do their testing. And going back to that one test that I wanted to move to strategic level, same thing. If you need to do a lot of testing, a lot of retesting all the time, and you're getting completely frustrated because you're just repeating, eat, read, repeat, sleep, and more testing, maybe you should try to move one layer up and see who else can help you.
Yeah. Okay, so I think there is a lot of to do for our projects in the future. So, one guide could be your new book, your new released book. So, get us into that. What's the storyline of the book?
Of this book?
Yeah, of this new one.
Well, it's called Surfing the Waves of Agile, because I didn't want to change the book for the second print. The title, surfing because it's fun and you need to look ahead for the next wave to participate. And it's all about value delivery in a changing world. And it used to be value delivery in large and medium organizations, only to find out that actually, except for some people in retail, we're always working for large organizations.
Yeah.
So I got that one out because I think everyone is. But there's a lot of things changing. We didn't even talk about AI yet, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the other solution for every question. Yeah, let's not for this time.
Yeah, no.
No, but any answer that I gave, the other answer could be, of course, AI. Yeah? Like, what's the biggest challenge? AI. What's the biggest challenge? AI, whatever. But in this book, it's basically about transformation. But I used to depict very often agile, but more the scrum part, the single team, like a reactor thing in a chemical plant. So basically, you have some metal thing, you put all the kind of chemicals in, little fire underneath, and that's the chemical process. And then you have some pipes in and pipes out, right, to add more stuff. And finally, the chemical product rolls out on the other side. So then you have something like supply lines and the outlet lines of the boiler. And the boiler would be the team then, of course, that makes everything happen, where the chemistry is really going. And I think testers are often focusing on the outlet, right? The outlet's everything from how do we integrate single team performance or single team results into one product, release it on several stages, check whether it's okay, etc. But the supply lines are also very interesting, and I have some soft spot for that. So in this book, I have a lot of talk about like how do you prioritize your epics? How do you do your refinement? What are the rules that you need to have? All the things that you need to have, basically, from the idea to concrete something that teams can build, like, aha, I get it, definition of ready, prioritizing, etc., and all the things around it to get that value flow going, of course. And the built-in quality, the last chapter that we've talked about previously as well in our other talks, is a little bit more supply, but it's also in there. Like,
So
that's the storyline of the book, basically.
Yeah, great. So I'm happy if I get one exemplar.
You get one example, yeah.
And we will surely put the link to
book. Better. I give you two examples, two examples, one for you and one for the listener that replies to you in your fine action that you create, something like that.
That's okay.
That's a good idea, right? Yeah. I mail you two, and if somebody's listening and says, I want it, I'm not sure how you're going to arrange that, you send it to him as well.
We'll manage it. Yeah, great. Yeah, that's good. And we will also put the link to the book in the show notes, yeah, and the information, so that I think it's very valuable, because I know your speeches and your content, your digs, it's no blah blah, it's all real practice, and I'm really, really happy that I can read it too and use it for my practice too.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, Dirk-Jan, thank you very much to be here on the show.
You're welcome.
The time is running very fast with you, so I'm. I think
it's always, especially when you're recording podcasts, right?
Yeah.
Most people say like, "Oh, already half an hour? Yeah, you just started." I thought.
Yeah. So I think we will do another episode in the future. I can imagine that. And yeah, so thank you very much that you were here. And
you're welcome.
I wish you all the best for the future, and happy to see the book and to that the people reading the book and enjoying it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Meet you around, and thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye bye.
Bye.